Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Bill's been bothering him. Practice on a Thursday sounds an awful lot like playing on a Sunday. And that's good news because, again, there's an awful lot that the Patriots aren't doing. And there's an awful lot that the Patriots are still doing. But the things that they're still doing don't really show up in the stat sheet and don't make the highlight reel. And so it kind of falls out of sight, out of mind. They're still very, very good. I mean, they really are. How good are they? We'll know a little bit more later today. Bob Soci, again, the play-by-play voice of the Patriots, is going to be joining us. And look, it's just as simple as this. Whenever you have a Bill Belichick team, no matter how much talent he's got, whatever he has, who was ever playing for the New England Patriots that day, will be prepared to do their jobs against you. So can you overwhelm them with your talent, your power, your speed? That is the question I think that the 49ers are going to be asking. The chess match in this one is going to be a fascinating study in a coach who knows everything and a coach that we think is one of the heir apparents to maybe who is the best coach in the NFL. When Bill Belichick decides to hang up the headsets, Kyle is going to be standing in the front of that line. Certainly the 49ers hope that he is. Jed York hopes that that investment will pay off with that sort of heralded next great coach. We're going to talk about who else might be standing in that line because there are some obvious and maybe some less obvious guys to talk about. Today, we had some interesting stuff going on around the Raiders. The Raiders had a 7-on-7 drill for practice today, and it's because right now they don't have an offensive line. I'm talking about the entire offensive line has been out of practice this week for the Raiders following Trent Brown's positive COVID test. So they basically dismissed the entire starting offensive line and are getting ready to play the Bucs. That game has been moved. The Sunday night game was supposed to be Tampa Bay in Las Vegas. The game has been moved to 1 o'clock, and in place of Sunday night football, we are now going to get Cardinals and Seahawks. So a big, big NFC West rival game is going to happen on Sunday night football instead of Brady versus Carr in Vegas. It's too bad. I mean, it really is. I know that even without fans, everyone wants to show off their new stadium, and they're not going to be able to do that on a Sunday night. But the reason why the game was moved to the afternoon slot is because they're still a little worried that this game might get moved to another week. And there's no way the NFL has given up a Sunday night. So that's why the games have been swapped. Hopefully it goes off. And look, I don't even know if the Raiders really want it to go off as much as they'd like a little bit more time, given all the problems that they've had just putting an offensive line on a field this week.
Well, I think it's pretty clear the NFL doesn't care how much time you get. They have made teams play with minimal preparation time. But it's not amusing to me. It's interesting to me that the Raiders' entire plan in moving to Las Vegas has been absolutely and utterly foiled. They wanted to have fan bases from 3 different areas. They have fan bases from none. They wanted to make a big splashy debut with their new stadium. That hasn't happened. Everything that could go wrong for them, at least in terms of developing a new market, has gone wrong. And yet they don't feel like they're at more of a disadvantage than most other teams. I mean, this should be a disaster for them. And it really hasn't manifested that way yet. Now, it may at some point, because you can only make a debut once, and it won't feel quite the same when fans are finally let into that stadium. But it just seems like they're playing somewhere, but it doesn't feel like Vegas yet.
I see what you're saying. That part is weird, but I don't know that they should be at a bigger disadvantage than any other team, because really, that's kind of what COVID is, right? Is like, screw what you thought were your disadvantages. Try this on for size.
Yeah. You think you're not going to have enough spots to tailgate? What about no one can get together to tailgate? How's that going to do for the size of your parking lot or the lack thereof? So,
well, really, what about you? We can't guarantee you a game.
Right.
It's rough.
Yeah. The problems have grown in size so much around the league that the Raiders piddly, you know, opening a new stadium in a new city problem seems cute by comparison.
It really is, though. Just it's rough for the new arena business. It's been a terrible year. If your big surprise was, let me show you how awesome it is to gather in mass in our new building in 2020, boy, did you pick the wrong year, or the wrong year picked you. I don't know how to say it, but we know what happened to the Warriors watching their plans for an arena get scuttled just a few games into a season. Well, about halfway through a season anyways, that the whole arena got scuttled when Curry broke the wrist. I mean, it felt like that, but at least you could still get together to go. Warriors were really, really bad. And that's part of our story here today. How do they get better? Today, they worked out Denny Advia, who is a interesting prospect, to say the least. They are kicking the tires on a whole bunch of guys. And what that means is they don't know exactly what they're going to do. They want to create, if not the reality for themselves, the illusion that they're willing to go in several different directions. They're looking for a suitor. It could be a smokescreen. I know that there's a lot of different ways to look at this upcoming draft. We're going to take a look at this upcoming draft a little bit later on today. We've got a great show for you this afternoon. Like I said, Bob Soci, who's the play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots, will be joining us in just a little bit here in our opening hour. He's coming up at 2:30. Alex Boone, former 49er, great offensive lineman, and super conversation. He'll be joining us a little bit later on today. Mike Silver, later on today, your no stupid questions. We will give you the safe space. It's been months since we've done that, so we're going to do it today. It's been a long time. We've got a good one for you. We hope you to be a part of it at 888-957-9570. We are brought to you by the Exergen Twice Daily Thermometer. So don't take chances with your COVID-19 and your family's health. Check your temperature before dinner and in the morning. Get an accurate reading in seconds with the Exergen Temporal Scanner. Not only, it's the only home thermometer that is recommended by physicians and nurses. And let me tell you, listen to the nurses, because they're the ones taking the temperature. They're the ones who really know. If nurses say it's great, that's even more important than the doctor saying it's great. So, recommended by physicians and nurses, it is the Exergen Temporal Scanner. Stay safe with Exergen. We are just underway here on 95.7 The Game, 888-957-9570. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, you can listen to 95.7 The Game on your smart speaker. Just ask it to play 95.7 The Game. Powered by Dell Technologies. Call 877-ASK-DELL. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. It is good to have you along today. Again, we've got 49ers and Patriots. I mean, that's a big game. There's just no other way to say it. That's a big game. I don't care what your record is. Whenever you're measuring yourself against the best coach in the sport, it's a big game. It's like a little bit of a chance to do inventory on who you are, how smart you are, how good you are. And that's what the Niners have in front of them. Another chance to really earn an awful lot of credibility that they lost in that Miami defeat. They're getting it back. They're also getting players back. They're getting a little bit healthier. We heard that Trent Williams was back at practice today. That's officially good news. We've got Bob Soci joining us. He is the play-by-play voice of the Patriots in about 12 minutes from right now, fellas. And as we start looking at this, and you know, handicapping what we're looking at, it's a chess match. It's a chess match between a young offensive mastermind and a defensive bona fide genius. And the thing about the Patriots is they might be 2-3, but their defense is pretty much good enough to be 4-1, 5-0. They just aren't scoring points and possessing the football the way that they want to, the way that makes Bill Belichick comfortable. When you start looking at the X's and O's and the chess match here, what stands out to you first?
The thing that stands out to me is how few options New England has offensively. They have Cam Newton either being Cam Newton or looking for players who are largely not of Patriot quality to try to make plays. So they're sort of operating one-handed, and it reminds me of sort of the first couple of Russell Wilson teams where he also was surrounded by not very good players and had to do a lot of things himself. And it's a miracle that he stayed upright and healthy through it. But, you know, Newton has less to work with than any of his good Carolina teams. And so watching him deal with that, to me, will be fascinating.
Yeah, I think because of that, what stands out to me is the other side of the ball. Like, I just don't really see a scenario where the Pats offense gets to 30. You know, they don't have much. Denver is no great shakes defensively, and they couldn't score against them at all, basically. So I think the Niners' defense should be okay. So what I'm most focused on is the other side of the ball, and specifically knowing how badly Kyle Shanahan wants to run and how important establishing a running attack is to this team's success, can they do that without Raheem Mostert?
It's going to be a big day for decisions in the backfield and how Shanahan goes up divvying up carries. You know, we're basically looking at do we want to call it a three-headed monster? Is Jeff Wilson officially a part of this three-headed monster? Or are we saying we basically have carries to divvy up between Jerick McKinnon and Jamichael Hasty, the rookie who has very little work underneath his belt?
I think it's definitely a three-headed monster. No question. I think it's just a matter of within that three-headed monster, how does it all break out?
So let's work with a nice even number, 30 carries. Split the 30 carries up between the guys. How do you like it?
How do I like it, or how do I think Kyle Shanahan would do it?
Both. How about that? You tell me what you think is going to happen, and then you tell me what you would do.
I don't know that they're that different. I tend to think that what Kyle Shanahan really wants to do with Jerick McKinnon is have him as a change of pace and pass catcher. So I expect the majority of the handoffs to go to Hasty and Wilson. I feel like if it was me, I might give it a little more to Wilson because he actually he's been here a while and he's shown us some things. But I kind of think Kyle Shanahan is going to give the bulk of the carries to Hasty. So somewhere in the 17 for Hasty, 9 for Wilson, and 3-4 carries for McKinnon with a couple of catches as well.
I don't know that I break it down that way, although I get why this is the exercise. I don't know that Hasty gets as many as those, but if you want to expand the definition to touches, then you could start including Samuel, then you could start including Ayuk, maybe even Kittle, and maybe you get to 35, 36, 37 run or run kind of plays, like the simple turnaround, you know, pass to the sidelines and then make a play from there, which is essentially a run because it's a play that you almost can't intercept. So I kind of think that there'll be less Hasty than that, but more wide receiver and tight end in that sort of grouping, because I still think Kyle Shanahan wants to control the ball, but I don't think he restricts himself to a run is this and a pass is that. What I do think is he's not going to throw deep until the Patriots show that they will let him.
Well, and Bill Belichick might be inviting him to throw deep That might be the invitation that they send to Jimmy Garoppolo. It really might be, because underneath is where he's effective. Underneath is where the 49ers have been operating. And I'm talking about underneath 5 yards and in the backfield. I think we're going to see an awful lot of press coverage. You're going to see an awful lot of squeezing towards the line of scrimmage. So maybe the lid is there to be lifted off. Michael Lombardi was on with the Morning Roast today, and he was talking about Jimmy, how he can pretty much show up and get it done. And then he ends on a note that is kind of what we were just talking about right there. Here is Michael Lombardi talking about Jimmy Garoppolo on the Morning Roast.
You know, I think a lot of it is what Jimmy does. I think we make so much of games, right? Like the last game, he's playing on a bad ankle up against the Miami pressure, and I don't think he handled it. I don't think he moved very well last week against the Ram defense that had been playing well up until that point. I thought he looked more in rhythm. He looked more like Jimmy Garoppolo. I think Jimmy's a really good player. I think he could play well for any team. It's just working the system what's best for him, minimizing his mistakes, reducing the opportunities that he does make mistakes, and making sure you're always hitting those long throws. I mean, the one thing Jimmy could do in New England, and I still think he does it well in San Francisco when they ask him to do it, is throw the ball down the field.
I haven't seen them really ask. Jimmy asked once to throw the ball down the field since he missed the pass to Emmanuel Sanders in the Super Bowl. I mean, to really put air underneath it, he doesn't do that at all. There's no quarterback in football whose majority of their passing yards have come yards after catch than Jimmy Garoppolo. The deep ball is the thing Kyle never asked him to really let loose. Now,
I mean, literally, when's the last one you can remember completed?
Nothing.
Me neither. So I don't know what the hell Michael Lombardi's talking about, to be totally honest.
Well, but in fairness, what you see is clearly the fact, but Samuel was out for the start of that. So there was no real deep threat unless they wanted to take chances with Ayuk, which I don't think Kyle Shanahan is comfortable doing with an unproven player yet. If Samuel had been healthy, I think you might have seen him throw more deep passes. But they started out without their best wide receiver.
They did, and then, but I don't think – oh, go ahead.
Well, and then Kittle gets hurt because he's the other guy who you can send downfield for an 18 to 20 yard throw. So I think in some ways the everything is a little bit deceptive in that they've never really had their full complement of passing game characters there. And on top of that, until this last week, they couldn't protect for Garoppolo anyway. So I think in some ways it's an incomplete more than it is a failure.
Okay, except I'm talking about the entirety of Jimmy Garoppolo's career as a Niner. Remind me of one real deep pass that was like a successful connection. So the only I can't think of them.
The only deep pass that I can really think of, I bet you there were more yards under that ball in the air than maybe any other ball that he threw. And it might even not – it got it. Now that I'm thinking about it, it might have been Nick Mullins that threw the ball. But it was –
I mean, this is the point I'm making.
The incomplete to Dante Pettis, where it looked like Pettis kind of gave up on it around the four or five-yard line.
Yeah, yeah. That was Jimmy. But, again, that's incomplete. He threw one to Ayuk last week that was incomplete. There's the Emmanuel Sanders in the Super Bowl that was incomplete. Every time I think of him throwing a bomb, it's a bomb that lands on the grass. So, now if Mike Lombardi's talking about the 20-yard in to Kendrick Bourne, you know, the post route in the middle of the field that goes for 25 yards, then okay. I've seen him make that throw well. But if we're talking about putting it up and letting someone go run under it, I literally can't remember a single time he's done that successfully. So I just don't. Not to mention, we'd never see Kyle Shanahan make those calls. Like, you watch a Bruce Arians offense, you see a few shots a game, every game. You don't see that with Kyle Shanahan. So that is not what I would expect.
I mean, John Gruden, that's all he does. John Gruden's only taking shots.
Ruggs is sprinting downfield and Carr's just laying it out there. And I don't think we've seen Jimmy do that hardly at all. And look, I'm not saying he can't. It may be that the personnel doesn't fit that because, there's no Henry Ruggs on this team, that's for sure. But it's not something they really do.
No, I don't. I think that's correct. I don't think they do it. And it might be a reluctance on Shanahan's part based on personnel. It might be his aversion to throwing an interception, even if it's way downfield. I'm not sure, but I think what we've seen, that we know we can put our finger on, is the idea that Shanahan is reluctant to do that, to open the field that way. I think he prefers eating up time and simplifying the game that way. And whether or not Garoppolo can or can't do it is sort of a moot point if he's never asked to do it. I'm just talking about this year. I don't think they've had the ability to do it.
So if they have the ability to do it now, isn't that what Bill Belichick is going to kind of force into your game plan? Belichick is going to take away as much underneath screen pass, bubble screen, backfield action as humanly possible. I mean, I think they're going to have Stephon Gilmore almost lining up in the backfield at times because that's where the majority of the catches are coming. So it's going to be a fascinating X's and O's tic-tac-toe matchup, and a man who knows that what Bill Belichick will be doing as well as anybody is good enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. He is the voice of the New England Patriots, Bob Soci, here on Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky. Bob, thank you for joining us today. How are you?
Hey, it's good to be with you guys. Thanks, Damon.
It is really good to have you on with us as we are starting to look at what Bill Belichick does. He makes teams play left-handed better than anyone probably in football history. Whatever your strength is, he almost takes it away immediately. So as they're getting ready to take on the 49ers, what do you think he's looking at as this team's strength, and how is Bill Belichick going to take it away?
Well, I think if he's looking to take one player away, it's probably an impossible ask, but they can certainly try to neutralize George Kittle and try to limit the damage that he does. And from a schematic standpoint, I would think you'll see a lot of what the Dolphins did with Brian Flores when Jimmy came back from the ankle sprain. I know that they really tried to muddle the middle. They had some six-man fronts early on as well, trying to contain the rushing attack. The Patriots really had some trouble against the run, and that, in particular, the San Francisco style of running. I'm not a technical guy. I'm not a good X's and O's, all-22 guy. But I do know that they've had difficulty with the outside zone runs. I know the Niners are coming in banged up, and they're depleted on both sides of the ball, and Mostert won't be there like he was last Sunday night. But still, I would imagine that Kyle Shanahan's going to try to establish that running game first and foremost. The Patriots will probably try to play a lot of guys close to the line of scrimmage. They may use a lot of defensive backs, in part because they don't have really much of a linebacking core at this stage. And I think they'll try to do what Miami did and force Jimmy to beat them outside the numbers and down the field. As I said, a lot of guys close to the line of scrimmage. Unfortunately, they can't have any defender stationed behind the line of scrimmage where so many of those passes were completed last week against the Rams, particularly to Deebo Samuel.
Without getting into the schematics, which you've already said you don't want to do, and God love you for that, how do the Patriots look defensively as opposed to last year? Because last year, all their raw numbers were superb. This year, they're not quite so glowing, but they're a lot better than they have been maybe since the mid part of the last decade. So in what ways are they materially or visually different than they were a year ago?
Yeah, Ray, it's a great question. And you look at the numbers from last year, and they were suffocating for most of the season. But you have to take into account as well, for the first half of the season, they were playing against the Jets' second and third string quarterback. They were playing against some really inferior offenses. And the numbers were padded a bit because of the schedule. And I think that by the end of the year, the true test was it was a very, very good defense, but not an historically great defense the way they had played through the first eight games or so. They were really exposed, and I mentioned their troubles with the run. They were really exposed by the running attack of Baltimore, which a lot of teams have been, of course, with Lamar Jackson. But from that point on, they had their issues, and it certainly was a huge factor in their playoff loss to the Tennessee Titans. When you look at their defense this year, the strength is, like last season, their secondary. But they don't have Dante Hightower and Jamie Collins and Kyle Van Noy, who were three tremendous players for them a year ago. And in the case of Hightower and Van Noy, the last several seasons in the front seven. And so you look at them now, and they have Stephon Gilmore, and J.C. Jackson is a guy that maybe a lot of people out in the Bay Area don't know about. He's probably as good as any cornerback in the NFL outside of Gilmore, Tre'Davious White, maybe a couple others when you look at the elite cornerbacks in this league. You know, they're strong at that position. Jonathan Jones is a very good slot cornerback, and the safety positions are good. So that's the one area where they really match up well with the defense from a year ago or any defense they've had under Belichick, in at least in my tenure calling games, which started in 2013. But I think the front seven is quite a departure from last year. And, you know, the Patriots had been building this defense a bit over the last couple of seasons to get to the point they were at in 2018. And then they got hurt by free agency defections and then COVID opt-outs. And among them were Hightower and Patrick Chung. And I think they really haven't been tested yet this season by a complete offense. You know, Russell Wilson killed them on the long ball. Last week, Drew Lock hit on some big shots, and Denver ran the ball well. But they haven't faced a team, I think, that, you know, schematically, and I said I didn't want to get into the schematics, but just as good as Kyle Shanahan is at attacking your weaknesses as a play caller, whether his team is at full strength or not, I think they're really going to be tested this week.
So the defense, for all the potential differences, has been the strong suit of the Pats so far. Offensively, just who are the weapons that an opposing team has to worry about other than Cam Newton himself?
Well, that is the great source of talk radio narratives in these parts, not only this year, but really the last couple of years. And I think, you know, part of the reason why Tom Brady had grown so displeased or dissatisfied of the situation here, a lot of people pointed to were the lack of weapons around him. And it was evident in 2018, but they overcame, you know, their lack of, targets outside of Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski, because they became a run-dominant team, and they really ran the ball down the stretch well. And then Brady hit Edelman and Gronkowski repeatedly late in the game against Kansas City in the AFC Championship, and the one drive that they needed, he went to those guys against the Rams in Super Bowl 53, and they prevailed in a low-scoring game. Last year, it certainly revealed itself again all season long, and now this year, they've revamped the offense with Cam Newton. It's a different style of offense, a lot of option runs in it. You know, the quarterback, in this case with Newton, is in many ways a guy who's expected to carry the offense even more so than with when Brady was here, as Newton did against the Dolphins in week one with his running. But there aren't a lot of downfield targets. Damiere Byrd right now is their best wide receiver because Julian Edelman is playing far from full strength. Edelman still gives you everything he has, as he did against Seattle, but I think battling a knee issue since training camp and after a terrific game against the Seahawks, there's just been, you know, very little that Julian has been able to tap into the last few weeks. And N'Keal Harry, who out of Arizona State was a first-round pick, has been a real disappointment to this stage. He wasn't targeted against Denver until the final couple of series. Overall, wasn't targeted the previous game for the Patriots. And we're going to watch this game here in New England, and a lot of people's eyes will be on Brandon Ayuk and comparing him to Harry, even Samuel, because Samuel was taken several picks after Harry in the draft, and Ayuk was on that same Arizona State team. And it's been unavoidable now for him, the comparisons between some of these guys who went later than Harry in the 2019 draft, Samuel, DK Metcalf, et cetera. But there aren't a lot of weapons there. That being said, Newton was not very good in the last game at all against Denver. It was a team that played without a lot of practice, of course, as you probably know, the last couple of weeks, not just the past week before the Broncos game, but really going back to Kansas City. And Newton's mechanics were awry. He wasn't reading or processing anything very well. And they really struggled from the start. This is a team that has not been in any kind of offensive rhythm, save for late in the Seattle game.
On the Bay Area Chevy Dealers guest line, Bob Soci, the voice of the New England Patriots here on 95.7 The Game. Have you ever been so deep into autopilot mode that you have accidentally called Cam Newton Tom Brady just based on rote memory?
Did I do that?
No, I haven't heard it. I'm just wondering if maybe, like you're saying, Brady, back to pass goes Cam. You kind of, you know, correct it yourself in real time there. You know, obviously, Jimmy Garoppolo is not a San Francisco 49er, but for the New England Patriots trading him here while the tug of war between Kraft and Belichick was, you know, using Tom Brady as the rope. Is there buyers or traders remorse in Garoppolo in any way? Did the Super Bowl appearance by the Niners sort of reset how people thought about it, if they were over it? And has Cam Newton been maybe the balm put on the burn of no Jimmy G after all?
Well, first of all, regarding Jimmy G and Tom Brady, and going back to the decision that Belichick and the Patriots had to make somewhere along the line in 2016-17, it depends on who you're reading and who you're listening to. That's another talk radio driver in these parts. And not only, you know, this week because the Niners are coming to town, but, you know, really every week since the start of the 2017 season, you know, when there was dissent within the ranks or friction, as Robert Kraft himself described it. When it comes to Newton and Brady, I want to go back to, you know, you asked me quite jokingly about mistaking Tom for Cam. I think the circumstances of this year have been so surreal for everybody. And when Brady ultimately signed with Tampa Bay, it was really the start of the first surge here in the spring with the coronavirus. And, you know, there was so much going on for people in our lives, and it was so unsettled that the news, as shocking as it was on one hand, on the other hand, I think people just took it in stride. And as we got closer to the season, there was a lot of excitement now because the Patriots in July signed Cam Newton, and he goes out there in training camp. And the story day after day, week after week, leading up to the season opener is this energy that Cam Newton has brought to the team and the personality. And, you know, Tom Brady's not here anymore, but this is going to be an interesting team to watch and follow, write about, talk about. And I think that carried on over the first couple of weeks of the season. But then when the Patriots struggled and lost against the Chiefs with Brian Hoyer in Newton's place, and the Patriots had this stretch of a couple of weeks with no practices and constant uncertainty, and Newton was on the COVID list after testing positive, and Tom Brady suddenly started to, you know, throw touchdown passes to five guys in one game and Rob Gronkowski in another game, the narrative about Brady's departure, I think, you know, gained a lot of traction. And now with Jimmy coming to town, even more so, you know, what was the right call? And to me, the Patriots did what they had to do. At that point in time, Tom Brady was coming off a season in which he was, you know, along with James White, they were the two Super Bowl MVPs. Brady got it. White deserved it. But nonetheless, he leads the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history against the Falcons. The offense was not the problem in 2017 when they lost to the Eagles in the Super Bowl. He passed for 500-plus yards. And then, of course, they win it all in 2018, and it wasn't a Brady-esque season for most of the year. But as I mentioned in the Kansas City game and then in Super Bowl 53 when they needed it, he made throws in the environment, particularly in Kansas City, that I'm not sure Jimmy would have made at that stage. And I'm a huge fan of Jimmy Garoppolo. I think he's a really nice young man. He was here, and hopefully he's been the same out there. I'm rooting for him, not this weekend. But to me, the Patriots, at that point in time, it was a no-brainer. Now, that being said, because the 49ers went to the Super Bowl last year, the Patriots got bounced in the wild card round, and right now the Patriots are 2-3. A lot of people are writing about and talking about the mistake the Patriots made when they kept Brady and traded Garoppolo. I think more the complaint should be about the return they got for Jimmy, just a second-round pick.
Okay, well then, let's go macro. You asked 100 Bostonians today. If you went to a bar and asked 100 Bostonians, who are they angrier about missing, Brady or Betts?
Ray, boy, that's a tough one these days, especially after game one. After game two, a little easier to take when it comes to Mookie. It's Brady, actually. You know, I would say that it would probably be 80-20. If not a greater disparity, tilting in the favor of Brady is the guy they miss most. And people are still, I think, you know, with Mookie, there's still a sense that, you know, that he, by some, that he wanted to stay here. He wanted to come to an agreement with the Red Sox. But I think most people who are informed and enlightened in these parts think that, you know, Betts wanted to test the free agent market. They're mad that he's no longer there. They're mad at the Red Sox in general. The Red Sox, it's incredible to me how much the interest in baseball in that franchise has waned. And I think it's not only because of Mookie's departure, but I think it's because of ownership and the way ownership handles things. Of course, they're not local, and you know they've won since 2004, and they've brought this team unprecedented success over the last couple of decades, but they've also had some really big misses. And this past season was a year, I think, when a lot of people were left scratching their heads, wondering why the Red Sox, with their resources, would want to go the route of the Tampa Bay Rays. And I don't mean by getting to the World Series, you know, as well as anyone when it comes to baseball economics, the difference between what you think of with the Red Sox and the Rays in their position. But I think that more people are really upset still about Brady, and I think they will be for a while, especially if this team continues to struggle the way it has the last couple of weeks. Like I said, there was a lot of excitement and interest because of Newton's performance out of the gate and all the energy being created and just a different attitude. Tom was not, frankly, a happy camper for much of last year, even after victories. And, you know, people saw that and heard that. But I think now they look back and they see him, as I said, throwing touchdown passes to Rob Gronkowski down in Tampa Bay and routing Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. And, you know, they're wondering where their quarterback is.
Who needs a Mookie or a Brady when you got a Sochi? Bob, thank you so much. We do appreciate your time today.
Hey, guys, I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Take care.
Voice of the Patriots, Bob Sochi, here on 95.7 The Game. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises.
Now back to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
I think more than any other reason baseball is romantic is because of all the sports out there, we can compare it to something that happened 100 years ago and usually sort of still be in the same conversation. There are so many rounds of the postseason now that so many postseason numbers have been really, really distorted. Randy Arozarena now has 22 postseason hits this year. That is the most hits by a rookie in a single postseason since Derek Jeter put up 22 hits in a postseason. So with the next hit, this guy that no one even heard of a month ago is going to be the most hitterish rookie in the history of postseason baseball. A couple extra rounds, more teams allowed in than ever before. That has something to do with it. But so does the fact that this guy's really, really good. I mean, it's amazing. There are a few guys that you don't know much about, and then you watch them, and then you watch them again, and then you watch them three or four times, and you're like, okay, I think I've seen enough. That guy can play. He falls into that category. He really does. He is a special player early on. That is pretty obvious. I don't know if you guys saw this last night. Chris Taylor had a two-run shot. That was the 15th home run this postseason by a nine-hole hitter. DH in the National League. You're ruining things. Or maybe making things better. I don't even know anymore. He's the first Dodger to hit a home run from the nine-hole since Kirk Gibson hit his walk-off shot in Game 1 of the 1988 World Series. But this one comes in a big fat loss that has Tampa Bay now tied with the Dodgers in the World Series. That was a good one last night. That was absolutely what we needed to see out of Tampa Bay to get them seriously back into this conversation. Didn't you think?
Oh, no question. I mean, because we need this to go seven. Otherwise, it's football wall-to-wall until the first of the year. In fairness to Arozarena, he's only played two more games than normal because they had the new playoff format. But the Rays won the league. And so really, if you want to make that stat about his hits more meaningful, just take off the four he got against Toronto, and he still got 18. And he still is a hell of a player, and he still changes Tampa's fortunes probably for the next several years, because he's the kind of guy who not only hits, but he's an outfielder of some quality too. So in fairness, you know, Tampa's doing this with guys that you didn't think you ever needed to know. Brandon Lau last night, who had two homers, had a hell of a year. You know, it's probably more of a testament either to the fact that we don't have enough sort of RAM in our heads to follow all 132 pro sports franchises. It's also a fact that we sort of file some teams as unimportant on day one, and when they become important, we're completely surprised by it. And I think that's the case with Tampa. And I'm not speaking about the three of us. I'm speaking about in general. People are still trying to figure out who Tampa is, and they're now in they're now heading into game three of the World Series.
And in a also, way, though, talking about the three of us. I mean, we do this for a living, and I think that they kind of snuck up on us a little bit this year too.
And to defend us and people, I mean, Randy Arozarena wasn't in the major leagues like 2.5 months ago.
Yeah.
So it's not that much laziness and failure to follow. Some of it is just this guy came out of nowhere, at least to any normal baseball fan. So in a lot of ways, that's exciting. I think that makes this a more entertaining series to have. Look, there's more than enough names we know on the Dodgers, right? Let's mix it up a little bit.
Game three is tomorrow night. Night off for the World Series, and then games 3, 4, 5 will be Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I really hope that we're not wrapping this World Series up in 5 games. I want 6. I would love 7. And I hope that we get it, because it will be that, you know, baseball is the sport that you kind of take for granted until it's gone, and then you really miss it. At least that's how it kind of goes for me every year. And we're really going to miss it when it goes away this year, because it was a fun, pleasant distraction, no doubt, when we needed one. Although, you know, the ratings, there's so much talk about the baseball ratings and how few people tuned into game one of the World Series. I'm sure a little bit later on today, these things usually come out kind of in the middle of our show. Someone's going to be...
They already have, if that's not... I'm sorry to interrupt, but the numbers have already come out. They are essentially the same as game one.
Oh, okay. So still down. Maybe not down as big as a game one debut, but... Game one drew 9.2 million viewers to Fox. It is the least watched World Series game since sports events have been measured for viewership nationally. What's odd about that is baseball's numbers were actually up this year. And it just shows you the problem that baseball has and how bad they are at marketing players and turning unknown players into not necessarily household names, but at least names you've heard of, names that don't sound completely foreign to you. And baseball has had this problem for year after year after year. The closer you get to a title, the fewer people are interested. And the argument of it being more of a provincial and local sport than a national sport has been made many, many times. I think one of the biggest problems that baseball has had, it's a self-inflicted wound. Think about what baseball's messaging has been for the better part of 2 or 3 decades, going back through the steroids era. I've never seen a sport work so hard to convince you through not just its own actions, but the media that covers it, the older media that is now angrier at it than ever before. I've never seen a sport try to convince you that its players are less likable, that their accomplishments couldn't even be close to being considered natural, that these guys are drug takers, women abusers. Like, the amount of negative press baseball has gotten from baseball's own press is unlike anything any other sport has to deal with, and that includes the rampant dislike of Roger Goodell. And that's saying something. Baseball's media, in many ways, is its own worst enemy half the time.
Well, baseball doesn't own the media, and they are responsible for the messages that come out. So, for starters, they did screw up the steroid era. They basically profited crazily big from it and then scapegoated the players when the wind changed. And that, I think, was the first time that people sort of saw the disconnect between management and the product that is trying to advance. It is only this year that they've started to abandon the notion of the unwritten rules. They're at least looking the other way on bat flips, which is not a big thing, But it's a concession for the fuddy-duddy crowd. And the third thing, and this is what baseball is really guilty of, they have force-fed the notion that there are only four teams that you should want to watch on a regular basis. It's as though they want to be the NBA. They want you to have the Red Sox. They want you to have the Cubs. They want you to have the Yankees. And if they're really kind about it, they'll throw in the Cardinals. But they don't, you know, they don't promote all teams even remotely equally. They don't put teams on prime time remotely equally. And they have largely changed the way they make money so that it doesn't matter if they don't promote most of their teams. I mean, they have been stuck in a cycle now for nearly 30 years where if there is a West Coast team in the World Series, that World Series is doomed ratings-wise.
Is that explaining some of what's going on here? You have the nobody-gives-a-rip Tampa Bay Rays against the, sorry, you're on the West Coast, and I don't care how big your brand is, the Dodgers are still a West Coast team, therefore not that interesting.
I think COVID gets involved. I mean, we talked to Jane McManus yesterday. I think there are a lot of reasons why numbers are down across the board. But I think part of it is Tampa Bay. Part of it is the Dodgers. And the Dodgers should be a big brand. They should be a fun team to sell, but they can't do it because on the West Coast, these games get played at 5 o'clock when, under normal circumstances, people would be in their cars driving home anyway, which is one of the big reasons why ratings are always down for West Coast World Series. But beyond that, it's just this notion that we'll tell who you should like. And the NBA is partially guilty of this, too, although they were certainly willing to make the turn when Golden State started making the money. And the NBA to this day will look at the Golden State years ago. That was the golden age because we all got really rich and we got a much bigger TV contract because we had something other that's out of the norm that's really fun to watch. Baseball solved the second part of the problem, but not the first.
The NBA has less of this trouble because they generally market stars as opposed to teams. LeBron James is going to get love whatever team he's playing for, whether it's the Cavaliers or the Lakers. You know, when Shaq was on Orlando, people were watching Orlando. People watch stars in the NBA, so we get Milwaukee on national TV all the time because they have Giannis. Baseball, it seems, puts the Yankees and Red Sox and Cubs on constantly, whether they interest people or not. And even if they do interest people, that works to the detriment of the other teams.
You're cutting off your nose to spite your face eventually. And it just seems like a lesson that they haven't received, even though the message has been pretty clear that the closer you get to a championship, the fewer people that are interested. That, to me, would be a concern. Baseball really hasn't done much to prevent it, and welcome everyone to your 3 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
How about this? Rob Ninkovich is going to join us at 5 o'clock tonight. He is a two-time Super Bowl champion and a Patriots legend, so he's going to be joining us. And we're looking forward to that. How about that? Look at that. Always working. Show's underway. They're still booking guests. That's what we like. Good job, studio. Thank you very much, Lucas and Nash. We were just talking.
We just got to make sure Nash can stay locked in with one of his Patriot Super Bowl champions coming on the show. Nash, you got to stay focused, buddy. You can't lose your stuff just because there's a Patriot on the show.
The biggest shot that we got in any professionalism is you can't ask for an autograph over a phone. So
yeah, don't do that. Yeah. Don't ask him for his address to mail in your football card so he can send it back signed. All right, now
would you please sign it, Stinky Ninky?
Hey, Lucas kept his cool and Lindell White came on, so I think I'll keep my cool today. So we'll be all right.
All right,
that's right.
But okay,
we will say this: that Lucas was, I think, dressed in a full USC football uniform.
He was.
Like, it was
pads
a
and helmet included.
Wait, does Nash get a question? I got a question to Lendell. Does he get a Ninkovich question?
Wow. I don't know if that's safe.
I only want a question if we ever get Tom Brady on, so I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Fair enough.
That's fair.
At that point, you're definitely not involved, but okay.
we don't need a restraining order at this stage of our careers.
Honestly, I could handle a restraining order from Tom Brady. We'll be okay.
Hey,
we'd get some news.
That's right.
Yeah, hey, you know, your show's trending nationally. Why? Well, let me tell you about Nash. So, Patriots 49ers matchup. Let's go back there. I don't know how much we're going to do to tantalize people with the Dodgers. Yeah, go ahead, Ray.
There's a bit of news.
Oh.
Apparently, the NFL is investigating. And the NFL and the NFLPA are reviewing the Raiders' recent COVID-19 issues, including the positive test for Trent Brown, who they believe has not been consistently wearing his tracking device, and video of offensive linemen hanging out together without masks, according to sources. So if we're going to do what we did with Tennessee and savage them for basically ignoring COVID protocols, it's time to spin it around for these guys, because between their coach and their players, they've been as cavalier about COVID as any team in sports.
I think that's a fair critique. However, I have not seen the photograph. I saw the Tennessee photographs, which made them fit nicely into the bullseye of any ire you wanted to throw at them. It's still an investigation. If at the end of the investigation you can prove a level of willful negligence or just a complete aversion to following the details that everyone else is trying to concentrate so hard on, then I think, yeah, then we can throw some darts at them. You know, I'm look at it this way. There have been very few teams that have had an outbreak. And I don't even know if we're looking at a Raider outbreak, or if it's just one guy or two guys or whatever.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.